All right, here we go. Okay, so today's message, I've entitled it, The Merciful King. Okay, The Merciful King. And we're going to look at three lessons from today's passage. The first one being the merciless rebel. The merciless rebel. Okay, so where am I getting that from? If you turn in your Bibles to, I guess, one page backwards, or my Bible is in the same page, so it's very easy for me. But in 2 Samuel chapter 17, 1 through 14, if you read, Absalom goes into Jerusalem. He has taken control of Israel. Okay? Now, again, this is not, you know, U.S. elections where, you know, president gets elected, the other guy just leaves, you know? It's not like that. So, again, this is like Revolutionary War type thing. Okay, they're kicking out the guy that used to be king. And what you want to do, according to the movies, is that if you become the new king, like, if Jay was a king of a country, and I want to take over Jay's country, what I gotta do is I can't just make sure Jay isn't king anymore. I gotta take over his palace, and then I gotta kill Jay. Because if I leave Jay alive, Jay might just go and, like, you know, raise an army with Nathan and come back and challenge me. I still kill him. Okay, I still win. Right? But I'm just saying, because there's that possibility. All right, so back in the day, that's what you do. That's standing procedure, standard procedure. So Absalom is the usurper. He is the rebel. Okay? He rebelled against his father. David fled from Jerusalem. Absalom went into Jerusalem to be the new king, quote unquote. Okay. However, now he has to go into phase two, which is to kill David. Okay. And it's interesting because in 2 Samuel chapter 17, verses 1 through 14, it's Absalom and his generals trying to think of what to do. And their conclusion is, basically, we got to kill David. That's their conclusion. They're like, oh, maybe we should take this guy out or take out this bridge. No, it's not even any of that stuff. They're like, we'll take out the bridge if that kills David. We'll take these people out if that kills David. Their whole point is kill David. It doesn't matter who we hurt in the process. We just got to get David. Okay? That's their whole thing. All right? And so taking David prisoner or anything like that, or even giving him mercy, is not an option. Okay? So this, so what we see here is Absalom's not just rebellion, because I think when we say just simply he rebelled against David, it's almost like we see Absalom as an insolent child. Like when I tell Honey, there's no more cereal. He wants more. What does he do? He slams his hand on the little table thing. It's like, what are you doing? You're not going to win. Okay, you're not going to win that battle, right? That's what we think about easily when we think, oh, Absalom rebelled against his dad. No, that's not what's going on. Absalom is actually attempting to murder his father. Okay, this is a very big deal. All right. Now, why do we need to care about that? Well, in this story, Absalom represents us. Okay. So, what the Bible defines as sin, and you know, the Bible gives us different examples and different pictures. One of which is that we are just like Absalom in that when we sin against God, it is a rebellion against His kingship. But not only do we want to kick him out of the country, but we want to kill him because we want to be king in his place. Okay? And we trace this all the way back to Adam and Eve in Genesis chapter 3. That crucial passage where it says Eve looked at the fruit and it was desirable for food, right? And it was desirable for What? To be like God. To be like God. That is the root cause of our rebellion against God. It's that we want to not only kick him off the throne, but we want to wipe him out and rule in his place. Okay? And so that is, so Absalom is our representative in this story. It is our great rebellion against God, the king, and our feeble and weak attempt to kill him. That is our great sin. Okay? So now, hopefully, that gives us a thought on why God has such a violent, seemingly over-the-top response against sin. Right? Because he's the king. You come against the king, not only do you, are we, you know, again, we're not thinking about this little rebellion like we, there's a king and we're like call him bad name or throw stones at him. None of that stuff, okay? We're like conspiring. It's a conspiracy, okay? We want to do him like JFK. We want to take him down, get him out, and we want to be ruling in his place, all right? So that's the first lesson, merciless rebel. The second lesson is the merciful king. Check this out. So 2 Samuel 17 shows Absalom's absolute devotion to David's death. He says, no matter what the cause, we have to kill David. Okay? He says, he's like, well, I'm willing to sacrifice anything and everything to kill David. David, on the other hand, shows us the opposite. Especially in verse 5, focus on verse 5. He says, David is saying this to the generals. Okay? And the understanding is that him saying it to generals would then be understood as them saying it to the commanders and the captains and so forth going down, right? And he says this, deal gently for my sake, the young man Absalom. So Absalom said, kill everyone for the sake of killing David, David on the flip side says, even if you have to wipe out everybody, save Absalom. He says the complete opposite. Right? And Absalom was saying, willing to sacrifice everything except himself for killing his father, David was willing to sacrifice everything for the sake of saving his son. Right? So, why is that such a big deal? Again, in this picture, whereas we are represented by Absalom, in this story, David represents God and his heart. And notice how he says it. Deal gently for my sake, the young man Absalom. What that means says to me is this. David, reflecting the heart of God, he didn't see Absalom just simply as a rebel or as a murderer. He saw through all of that to Absalom as a little boy, as his child. And I sort of understand it now that I have a son, right? And my parents say that all the time. My parents still tell my brother and I stories about stuff we used to do when we were little kids, you know? I mean, my parents, every time we get together, my mom still tells stories about how Peter used to poop when he was a little baby walking around. It's very embarrassing. It's like 30 years after the fact, she still does it. Right? Why is that? Because she doesn't see manifest. She doesn't see Peter King the grown up. She sees Peter King the little baby. Right? And I'd imagine that Peggy and I are probably gonna do the same thing with our child. He can grow up to be president of whatever. It don't matter. He's still gonna be our little boy. And that's sort of the heart of David, reflecting the heart of God, that where it's easy for other people from watching from the sidelines to look at all the bad things of Absalom and his rebellion, David, being the loving father, he sees through all of that rebellion and all that garbage, I mean, that bad as it is, and he still sees his child. Why is that such a big deal? It's simply this. It's that God, even in our darkest moments of sin, and even in our moments of greatest rebellion, God has the right, just like David, to see us as rebels and to punish us accordingly, even at that moment. However, he doesn't do that. Even at that moment, he sees us in our moment of weakness, and he still sees through all of our sin and all of our mistakes, all of our crap, and he still sees child. He still sees my child, my kid. And so it is as if the angels and the armies of heaven are gearing up for war. Okay? They're just, you know, they're getting ready to do it. Bring down all kinds of disaster. And in the middle of all of that, right? In the middle of all of that, what's going on here? Can we do that, like, after? Okay, well, they're going to have to do it after. Yeah. All right. Sorry. Let me get my train of thought back. So it's as if God, in that moment with the armies of heaven, because if you remember, his army is pretty stacked, pretty crucial, right? He has this bad boy in his army called the Destroyer. It's literally just called the Destroyer, or the one who brings destruction. Okay, he comes out in the Passover, right, in Exodus. It's crazy, right? This homeboy just goes and just wipes people out. Okay, God with his army, right? He's about to, right? He sees humankind as a rebellion army, a rebellion against him. He's about to send them out, and then, but then at the same time, right before they go out, he tells his angels, do what you gotta do, but spare my kid. Right? That is in essence what God does. That is in essence, that is basically what David does in this story. And so the craziest picture of God that we see here is not a God primarily, number one, of justice, but a God of mercy. In Psalm 130, we see this. If you, Lord, should mark iniquities, or if you, Lord, should count sins, O Lord, who could stand? But there is forgiveness with you that you may be feared. Because what we see in this picture with David and how he, in his heart towards Absalom, even in the midst of Absalom's attempted murder and conspiracy to murder, what we see in that one line to his generals is David's absolute forgiveness. If only Absalom would come back to him. And we're not going to get to it, but what we see in this, at the end of chapter 18, is that Absalom dies as a result of this battle. His whole army gets wiped out. And what does David do? David, again, portraying the heart of God. David doesn't rejoice over the death of his enemy. He doesn't see Absalom as his enemy, although Absalom sees him as an enemy. But when he hears the news of Absalom's death, what does he do? He weeps. He doesn't call him a rebel. He doesn't call him any other name other than my son, my child. And that is, in essence, what we see God in terms of how he deals with us, not just those of us who would call ourselves Christians, but those who do not trust in Jesus. See, for many of us, we think that, oh, God is just ready to just smack people and just send people to hell and all that stuff and just punish people. He's not. And he is greatly heartbroken, right, at the death of his children. Okay, and when I say death, I'm talking eternal death, the second death. Okay. And so the third lesson, see, a just king. I'm a big fan of movies, and I remember this one line from a movie. It says this: do not confuse kindness with weakness. That's a good line, right? Honestly, this is why I watch a lot of movies, Peggy, okay? Because I need sermon prep. I need a lot of stuff for sermons, all right? So this one movie, I won't tell you where it's from because there's a lot of violence, but says this: do not confuse kindness with weakness. And it fits in this lesson for us to see God. Because we hear ever since, you know, if we go to BBS and stuff, we hear about God is good, God is gracious, God is merciful. We hear all these words. And we somehow start to think, hey, if God is gracious and merciful, somehow we start equating that with weakness. With weakness. And I share this story with some of you guys that when I was in Mason, another Christian fellowship was doing this world, this whole campus-wide outreach. And I heard this story. It's Campus Crusade. And this one Campus Crusade guy, he was trying to talk to a Muslim guy, right, about Jesus. And the Muslim guy said this. He says, you know what? I can't accept Jesus. Because your God is too weak. And the Campus Crusade guy, what do you mean? He said, because your God, he lets you guys run all over him. And what he was talking about was this whole idea of grace and, you know, mercy, forgiveness. You know, because in Islam, just like in Judaism, if you sin and you want forgiveness, then you need to do X, Y, and Z. He, from his perspective, said, you know what, your God is weak because he just lets you guys off the hook. To which point, a lot of us be like, I don't know what to say to that, right? But thanks be to God, this guy actually knew what to say, and what he said was this. He said, I understand where you're coming from, and it would be weakness if God had no control over it. But it's not really weakness because God lets us walk over him. Meaning God forgives. God chooses to forgive. It's not as if God's hands are tied behind his back and he has to forgive. God chooses to forgive. That is not weakness. That is power. Because he has choice. Right? And so this is the third lesson. Because again, we could just focus on the merciful nature of David, right? But we can't overlook that at the end of verse 7, right? Samuel records, or at least his scribe records, 20,000 people lay dead on the battlefield, right? There is a great and real consequence for rebellion against God, okay? That is called justice. But as one famous pastor named John Piper once said, without justice, there is no mercy. Okay? If you have no justice, there's no mercy. And it's a little bit like what that Muslim guy was talking about at Mason. Okay? If God had no, he just forgave everybody all the time, then he has no justice. He has no rules. Even if he had rules, it'd be a disaster. Because he wouldn't enforce it or couldn't enforce it. And if God couldn't enforce it, then he would no longer be God. Right? But what we see is God, who is merciful. And the importance of that mercy comes out when we realize God as is a God of justice. Meaning when there is wrong, he needs to judge accordingly and act accordingly. Otherwise, he is not truly king. He is either an evil imposter or a powerless semi-god. You can't have both. You gotta have either or. Okay? And so what we see is God as being a God of mercy. And that mercy is highlighted by the fact that he is also just. And we see that shown in David. Because David is the one that gave the command to his generals to go fight this battle. Because these 20,000 people are the people that rebelled along with Absalom against David. These are the people that are saying, yeah, we want Absalom to be king. We want to take David out. So David is the one that gave that command. Go to battle, wipe him out. So lest we think, oh, David's a little bit of a softy here. No, remember, this man been fighting, and he's a violent man his entire life. He has no problems with bloodshed and violence. Right? Not to say that God is like David and he likes violence and stuff like that. Right? But at the same time, God is a God of justice. And so he has, in his nature, he has to react or he has to act against sin, against wrong, against rebellion. Right? Otherwise, he is not a king or a semi-god playing king. And so in closing, we see God who is merciful because he is also just. And we see that he is merciful to us because Jesus has already paid the price for our rebellion. Because in life, there is a time, a day, when everybody in the history of the world will have to give an account for their rebellion. And the divider will be whether Jesus has already paid the price for our rebellion, or in rejecting him, we must bear that price ourselves. That is the big, great divider. That is the one singular point that divides all of human history. What do we do with this man, Jesus? Let's pray.